Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, January 16th. After today, we'll have just three more days left of the United States as Abraham Lincoln envisioned it, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Let's all work hard to make sure it doesn't perish from this earth over the next 4 years of idiocracy. That's the kind of mood I'm in. Let's see what kind of mood Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital, are in today when we break down the latest government figures on national health expenditures. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, for me, I'm expecting the largest, most hugest crowd ever for next Monday's inaugural, as you were talking about. Although Michelle Obama won't be there and Melania Trump is refusing to have tea with Jill Biden, which is a tradition among first ladies, there is a reality TV show opportunity in here somewhere.
Dave, that was your Trump impersonation. That was pretty good.
It's pretty easy.
Yes. Must be working on it. Well done. Julie, how are you? Didn't think you'd hear that this morning, did you?
I don't know if I'm ready for 4 years of Dave's Trump impersonations. Well, I've been in San Francisco at the JP Morgan conference, and, you know, it's been quite a week for a lot of people. There's definitely a bit of a beat here, but not a health plan in sight, that's for sure.
It's not surprising. Okay, before we talk about national healthcare spending, let's briefly talk about Monday, January 20th. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Dave, any factoid, revelation, or personal insight to share about MLK Jr.?
Well, thanks for asking. I had coffee last week with my neighbor, John E., who just won the Pulitzer Prize for his MLK biography. For those of you who haven't read it, it's just an incredible book. It took him 6 years to write. And when I read it, I remember being surprised by three things. First was just how young Martin Luther King was. He died at age 39, and look at his record of accomplishment in those 39 years. Just remarkable. Also, it's his, I guess, his reputation or his story has been sanitized a little bit. You know, he was much more radical on policy prescriptions than is typically put forward. For example, he was in favor of a guaranteed minimum wage. That's what the Poor Person's March in Memphis was all about. And I guess the last thing that was surprising and very scary is the extent to which our government invaded his private life with the intent to cause him harm. But anyway, good for John. The Pulitzer Prize, he's working on his next book, which is going to be George Soros. Can't wait.
Sounds like a great read. Thank you, Dave. Julie, how about you? Anything to share about MLK Jr.? Not RFK Jr.
Well, you know, I've appreciated raising kids in San Francisco at progressive hippie schools, and I'm sure there's a lot of other schools across America that do this, but our kids' preschool would always have an MLK parade, and we still have the little signs that the kids made, you know, on the popsicle stick with the cardboard glued to it, and they're part of a collage that say things like, "He used his voice. He was nice," and all these very simple messages. And it's sometimes, I always think about that on this day because I think, gosh, it's really amazing how schools teach about people like this who had such an enormous impact. And, you know, kids parade around the school and the like. Like, it's, we should do more of this in our schools, that's for sure.
That's where it starts. Thanks, Julie. Well, here's mine. MLK Jr. spoke at my alma mater, Elmhurst College, which is now Elmhurst University, in July of 1966. I was six at the time, and my parents didn't take me. I don't think they even knew about it. And I didn't know he spoke there until a few years ago, which blew me away. And if you knew the demographics of the town of Elmhurst in 1966, and even today, it would blow you away too. It makes me even prouder to be an alum there. Can you imagine that meeting? Hey, let's have MLK Jr. Come out and speak at the college. Who's going to tell the town?
Wow.
That was when he was leading the protest for fair housing in Chicago. And he, King, made the observation that he thought the racism in Chicago was as bad or worse than anything he'd seen in the South. So you're spot on.
Wow. So we all have something to celebrate on Monday.
Yep.
Should we be celebrating the latest data on national healthcare spending? And there's your transition. In December, CMS published its latest historical data on national health expenditures. Dave, you briefly mentioned it at the end of our final podcast in 2024, but now it's time to dig a little deeper. I'm going to share some highlights from the new report, and then I'm going to get your reaction. Here goes. Total spending rose 7.5% to $4.9 trillion in 2023. Spending on hospital care rose 10.4%. Spending on physician and clinical services rose 7.4%. Retail spending on prescription drugs rose 11.4%. Spending on home health care rose 10.8%. And spending on long-term care rose 9.5%. That's a lot of spending. Dave, give me your reaction to the numbers. What policy failures are behind the increases, and what can we do policy-wise to finally bend that cost curve?
Well, I got to say, if you're part of the healthcare industry, the traditional healthcare industry, laissez les bons temps rouler, let the good times roll, right? I mean, look at these numbers. Overall spending up 7.5%, particularly good for hospitals. And, you know, if you're an incumbent, you can almost feel the huge sigh of relief. Okay, we're back to the way we've always done things, which is we hospitals, we healthcare get more than our fair share of the national economy. So inflation was 4% in 2023. I just reviewed the Kaufman Hall flash report to get ready for this, their latest one in November 2024. And guess what? Next year's numbers are going to be every bit as bad as this year's in terms of the expenditure increases. Just on the hospital side, operating margin is 4.6. It's up 15% from last year. Length of stay is down. Discharges are up. Again, we're just kind of reverting back to pattern. And I suppose if you're in the healthcare industry, that's a good thing, unless it isn't. And the reason it wouldn't be is, as I've said a couple of times here, I think we've entered this period of disequilibrium in healthcare, a little bit like in physics, where water turns to steam and very small changes can have disproportionate impact. So what is really happening with all of this added funding going back into healthcare is just putting more pressure on a system that's already under enormous pressure. So I'm expecting to see, you know, some small changes have a disproportionate impact. You asked about the policy failure. It's really just enabling the monopoly and monopsony pricing power, not just in hospitals, but kind of across the board within the industry. And until we attack that, we aren't ever going to see the industry revert to more normal economic-oriented, value-oriented, consumer-oriented behaviors. I found this quote from Jeff Goldsmith from a 1989 issue of Harvard Business Review talking about the future of hospitals. And he wrote, "Except for major regional institutions, the acute care hospital as we know it will probably not survive. In the future, acute care will be concentrated in a small number of high-tech regional centers treating traumatic and chronically ill patients. Community hospitals will continue to provide some acute care. Still, most of the care will be ambulatory and often located off campus." Well, that is as true today as it was in 1989. Goldsmith had to walk back his prediction because he underestimated the resilience of the hospital sector. What he really underestimated was their lobbying power and ability to capture the regulatory process governing hospitals. Policy-wise, what would be wise policies? We need better buying. We need removal of the medical protectionism embedded within regulations at both the federal and state levels, more pricing transparency. And all this is happening. And that's why I think we are at a period of disequilibrium and where some things are going to happen and they're going to have a disproportionate impact. So it's going to continue this way, you know, excessive spending on the acute care sector until it doesn't.
It falls off a cliff. But until then, let the good times roll, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
So, Dave, I don't know if you saw some of this discussion around Congress looking at policy changes to decrease spending on hospitals and particularly their outpatient clinics. Did you see any of this? Have thoughts on it?
Well, the real body blow here for hospitals would be the implementation of site-neutral pricing. A lot of the healthcare margins that I just referenced are built on the fact that they can charge hospital-based prices for procedures conducted in outpatient centers, doctor's offices, ambulatory settings. And there's a lot of pressure to just get rid of that. The other program that's under attack that could be a body blow to hospitals are the 340B subsidies for hospitals and drug purchases. That directs a lot of revenue into hospitals that, if it went away, would be catastrophic. The way I look at it is U.S. healthcare, to use a metaphor, is very good at rescuing people when they're drowning, but we don't teach people how to swim. So what really needs to change, and these prescriptions like site-neutral pricing will force it, we have to shift focus to prevention and health promotion so we don't need as much pure health care.
Like paying $10 for a Diet Coke at the movies.
Exactly.
Right? There's my analogy. Thanks, Dave. Julie, you're up. In one of our recent podcasts, you said a single snowflake doesn't feel responsible for the avalanche or something like that. What's your reaction to the numbers? What market failures are behind the increases? And what can the market do to bend the cost curve in the right direction?
That has been my favorite phrase as of late. You know, I'm with Dave on everything you said earlier. These numbers are, you know, COVID year is catching up with us, fueled by inflation in all the key cost categories. And, you know, we know the labor situation was out of control in the particular year that this data came from. So hopefully, Dave, we'll see a little bit of a right sizing perhaps from the labor component in the future. But supplies were also out of control, with the supply chain being really interrupted and some Herculean efforts to get supplies into facilities. And just inflation in general that's now stuck with us, right? We have an entirely new pricing floor. So just as slower growth during COVID resulted in somewhat artificially low numbers, these feel like a catch-up cost, but I also agree with Dave. You know, we're going to see numbers in the next couple of years that I think could be as bad or worse. But I was intrigued by the comparison of the cost categories you talked about, Berta. Three in particular. Hospital care is $1.5 trillion, or 31% of the total. Physician and clinical services is $978 billion, or 20% of the total. And retail prescription drugs is only $449.7 billion, or 9% of the total. And when you look back in history, you know, hospital expenditures grew most during the 70s. And then in the 80s and 90s, you saw prescription drug prices and our spend and the spend on physician and clinical services, you know, rise faster. So from 2020 to 2023, this retail prescription drug category has experienced the fastest growth at 8.6%, when it had been in the previous decade, 3.3% on average. And in the hospital and physician clinic category, it was more like, you know, 6+%. So this retail prescription drug category, I think, is most interesting in many ways. Since 2020, it's grown faster than any of the other categories. And of course, diabetes and obesity drugs are now really contributing to that jump. And of course, it's, you know, boosting spending across all categories. We're going to see a massive catch up on retail drugs. And the question is, how will that affect this $1.5 trillion and climbing on the hospital side? So to Dave's point in bending the cost curve, you know, the site-neutral payment softball, Dave, that, you know, health systems, I heard it at JP Morgan in the not-for-profit track, you know, from every presentation, almost every presentation, not from the academics as much, but they're all talking about their movement into ambulatory ASCs and other ways to just build a broader footprint because they know that acute care is not here forever. At the same time, they're all building new buildings. So, you know, site neutral payments are going to be key here in terms of how that building, the footprint, actually shifts the cost for sure. You know, everything I look at, technifying the human laden processes, is still moving relatively slowly. And as we all know, some of these technical processes, technologies are actually increasing costs before they actually can decrease costs. And the jury's out on some, right? So our ability to really harness virtual care hasn't really come to fruition, unfortunately, but we are seeing health systems start to thread it through their business models in a much bigger way. So I have hope that we're going to see more savings, or I hate to say savings, more impact from technology in coming years. Even navigating consumers and health plan members to higher quality, lower cost providers, it's happening, but it's still in the really, really nascent stages and trying to work out the kinks and figure out how to do it right and how to engage, you know, health plan members, et cetera. But I come back to, I think it's this drug spend. You know, we're seeing movement, even though the prices and the expenditure on drugs will increase, we're cutting out the middleman now. So I think we're going to bend the cost curve in some way by cutting out that middleman. And that's what I get most excited about.
Isn't there some expression about middlemen and technology, right? That's where technology has its biggest impact to replace.
Well, it's Andreessen from Andreessen Horowitz, Mark Andreessen, who said that great technology eats the middle, basically gets rid of all the administrative layers that, and I don't think any industry has more of those than healthcare. So
great analysis. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
The overall healthcare expenditure increase of 7.5% in 2023 is absolutely breathtaking. Unbelievably, or maybe not, when you look at the relationship between commercial spending and government spending, commercial health insurance jumped at an even higher rate of 11.5%. Given these numbers and the annual Medicare enrollment increases of over 2 million baby boomers a year now, how much ability do you think providers are going to have to cost shift from the higher paying commercial rates to cover their costs? Can they remain solvent with the current delivery models? And by the way, did anybody say fault line?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I don't think this is happening quite so overnight as maybe your question would make it sound, Dave. And everyone's still chasing commercial, right? But let's just talk about how health systems chase commercial. They put up billboards. Right? Like, there's most health systems are still not using market segmentation and, you know, contemporary marketing techniques to pull commercial patients into their health system. So there will be winners and losers, I would say, you know, more quickly than maybe I said in the beginning, of those health systems that actually really start to run like businesses, they'll be able to make it work. And you'll see markets start to really evolve based on those health systems that try to engage in that way. I still think there's a lot of meat here, Dave, but I do think we're going to see these numbers flip pretty quickly from the commercial to the Medicare. It'll just be sort of market by market, winners and losers, and then there'll be nothing left. And, you know, I don't know how many years I give it, but I give it a couple.
Thanks, Julie. Well, I know my gross income didn't go up 7.5% in 2023. That's bad. But on the other hand, unbridled healthcare spending gives me something to write about. So that's good. But at least once before I retire, I would like to write about healthcare spending going down. How cool would that be? You know, like winning the Super Bowl and then announcing your retirement, right? Go out on top. Not like the Packers, Vikings, or Dolphins this year, unfortunately.
No. Ouch. Don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Triple ouch. Yeah.
Ouch.
All right. Let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. Wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, we're starting to see news from the Trump administration on who will be some of his picks for big positions. And Chris Klump, who is a tech entrepreneur from Collective, is said to be leading the $1 trillion Medicare program, otherwise known as CMS. So that's interesting.
Yeah, at least he has some healthcare experience, right?
At least, yeah.
Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
My big news for the week, I think we need a drum roll for this. The FDA announced that it was banning red dye number 3, except in maraschino cherries. So cocktails and ice cream sundae are still going to be okay.
There goes the Manhattan? Is it Manhattan's, right?
Okay. So they're following Europe and Australia. We'd already been banning red dyes in cosmetics since 1990, and it does portend an increased focus on food safety, which is probably a good thing. The reason the FDA is getting rid of red dye in food is because it causes cancer in rats. There's also all kinds of concern that it leads to autism and ADHD in kids. 8 food dyes remain that are still allowable, but RFK is coming. So watch out, Lucky Charms and Captain Crunch.
Classic. And pink peeps around Easter, right? We're going to have to stack up.
Beet peeps.
Yeah.
Beet peeps.
Yeah. Great, great stuff. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.